CBSI on the World. I'm John Betts with Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Pleased to welcome our colleague, Joseph Umar, the Executive Director of Secure Free Society. The dateline is Peru, Lima. Police in Peru announced the arrest of an Iranian citizen who was purportedly a member of Iran's Quds Force and allegedly planned to kill an Israeli citizen in the South American country. Joseph, a good evening to you. This is fresh news. What do we know about the killer, given the many years of suspicions that Iranian killers have entered and exited South America? I'm thinking of the murder of prosecutors. Without interruption, suddenly the Peruvian government has a police force that's effective. Is this good news? Is this something that we should pay attention to? The screening is better. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Good evening, Malcolm. Well, certainly whenever you thwart a potential terrorist assassination plot, it's always good news. So that's the good news. They were able to thwart this plot. The Peruvian authorities arrested an Iranian national named Majid Azizi, who they accused of being a member of the Quds Force of the IRGC. And apparently he was targeting an Israeli citizen that was visiting the country because of a conference that is called APEC. It's a trade conference that has to do with Asia. So they thwarted the plot. That's the good news. Now, here's the bad news. The bad news is that Peru seems to be a target of Iran and Hezbollah. This is not the first time that Peruvian authorities have arrested a member of Iran or Hezbollah involved in some kind of nefarious activity. Back in 2014, there was a Lebanese national that was arrested because he was a member of Hezbollah and he was plotting some type of terror activities inside the country. Peru fumbled that case. They had all the makings to be the first country to successfully convict a member of Hezbollah for doing terrorist activities in their country, and they fumbled it. And last year, actually, they absolved them for the second time of the terror charges. He eventually got convicted of immigration fraud, but that's obviously not the main reason he was there. So now Peru gets the second opportunity. Their counterterrorism forces, which are really good, which is the reason why they're thwarting these things, has the opportunity to basically rewrite history and correct the wrong of letting the Hezbollah guy go and convicting this member, or if he's a member or he's an assassin or he's a contractor of the Quds Force, but whatever he was doing down there, it was not good, and they have a chance to now prosecute him. If they're able to successfully convict him, they send a huge message all throughout Latin America that these kind of operations that Iran does around the world, targeting Israeli businessmen, targeting Jewish citizens all around the world, is not going to be tolerated. And I think that's a very important precedent that needs to be set. This is a case that's more important than what it seems, and it needs to be carefully monitored.
Malcolm?
How widespread would you say these activities are, and to what degree do you think that that Iran and others might bypass their allies and the conduits in South America and use the open border to bring people into the United States?
Well, that's an important question, Malcolm. Let me try to unpack that a bit, because first let me say that with this case in Peru, and we've seen previous cases with Hezbollah having a terror plot in Brazil in November of last year, Argentina had some activity with Hezbollah in January of this year. There was a case in 2021, very similar to this Peru case, of the IRGC hiring an assassin in Colombia that was thwarted. And what the common denominator of these cases is that we're starting to see Iran, Quds Force, and Hezbollah start to hire local assassins, basically local criminals in Latin America, to carry out complex operations. Now, in these cases, they were thwarted. They weren't successful. We don't know if they've been successful in other cases, because obviously that gives them a level of plausible deniability. But I bring that point up because when we start to look at the U.S. southern border, obviously we're going to scrutinize Iranian nationals, Lebanese, Palestinian nationals that come to the southern border, because they're designated as potential terrorists because of the way Homeland Security does their screening. However, are we going to scrutinize Peruvians? Are we going to scrutinize Ecuadorians? Are we going to scrutinize? We don't even scrutinize Venezuelans, and that's the number one nationality on the border. But if Iran is Hezbollah starting to use cutouts, it's starting to hire local Latin Americans to do these assassinations and other complex operations, then that's going to complicate things on the southern border. There have been incidents of Hezbollah supporters and Hezbollah network affiliates involved in crossing the southern border. I know that firsthand because I've helped investigate some of these cases. But I think it's going to get broader if the trend turns out to be more of a pattern where Iran and Hezbollah are now using cutouts in Latin America to do their terror activity.
There's a photograph of Rouhani of Iran sitting next to Maduro of Caracas. The backstory is that there was some falling out between the two members of the Axis of Resistance to do with oil products, but that they're making friends again, anticipating that the U.S. will reimpose sanctions on Venezuela. Is this news, Joseph, that the Rouhani is with Maduro, or is this just show for the fans of both, and it doesn't change the strategic situation?
No, it's not news. Rouhani is scheduled to visit Venezuela sometime later this year. I'm sure there's ongoing talks always between Iran and Venezuela. They're very close partners. But I think that what the premise was wrong in that article that was reported about the what differences they might have had over payments related to oil transfers, the premise was wrong because the premise of that article suggests that the baseline of the Iran-Venezuela relationship is financial or commercial or economic in nature. Yes, there are commercial agreements. Yes, there are financial transfers. But that's not the base of the Iran-Venezuela relationship. The Iran-Venezuela relationship is based on their antipathy and their hostility towards the United States, Israel, and the West. That's why they're aligned together. As they're not aligned together because they want to do business. That's not why they're together. If they wanted to do business, Venezuela could look for oil from other or refining from other places. Iran has other markets to enter in Latin America. But they're together because they're two autocratic totalitarian regimes that are uniting forces to attack the West. And so I think that the premise was wrong. There has not been a fallout between Iran and Venezuela. There obviously there might be disagreements and differences, but over time, throughout the year, step by step, they have been incrementally and now rapidly binding joint capabilities. Iranian armament has increasingly been arriving in Venezuela since 2020 to the point that now Venezuela has the level of armament that the Houthis have in the Red Sea and in Yemen. So the premise is wrong on that article.
Malcolm?
Could you, I know in the past you've talked about some of Hezbollah's drug activities. Are we seeing any kind of increase with the fentanyl and all of the plagues that we are witnessing? Is Hezbollah playing a role on our border bringing that stuff in?
I don't know about Hezbollah playing a role with fentanyl. One of the things with fentanyl was the money mechanisms that were used to launder the money for the fentanyl trafficking was mostly done by the Chinese banks. And one of the kind of innovative things that the Chinese criminals did was they undercut the Lebanese in terms of the money laundering. So like the Lebanese would historically actually were the major money launderers for the Mexican cartels, but they would charge about 15% commission for that service. The Chinese criminals were charging and the bankers and the brokers were charging upwards of 2-3%. So they were able to undercut it. But the Lebanese are always, let me be careful how I say this. The Lebanese clans that are supportive of Hezbollah in Latin America have always historically been involved in all kinds of illicit finance, everything from contraband to money laundering to bulk cash smuggling. This has not gone away. This is like a big business. It's something that's come omnipresent. And you go places like the tri-border in South America, Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay. It's all over every day in those communities. You could go to places like Panama, Colombia, and Venezuela, a maritime tri-border, and you start to see the same thing. And here's the kicker, Malcolm, I think, to the question. They also do this in Mexico. A lot of the cases that historically have been investigated by the DEA that involve drug trafficking ties to Hezbollah involve Hezbollah supporters and Hezbollah sympathizers in Mexico that are doing that activity. That has not gone away. I just don't know if it's directly tied to fentanyl.
Joseph Umeyer is the executive director of Secure Free Society. Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,